These song leaders are trying to keep me on my toes. I was ready to preach before that last song. Mark sort of headed me off, so I didn't push him out. You know, we go to school a lot of our lives. And not just at the end, not at the end of our lives, but at the beginning. In the critical years. I don't know how many thousand hours we spend. If we go through 12 years of public education and then perhaps add to that some college education and sometimes to that some graduate education. With a lot of hours spent, and they're not just spent doing things. They are spent learning things. It is a situation in which certain parts of our minds are being trained in certain directions. Therefore, we cannot just say this is time out from life. This is just a part of my existence that has no special significance, so I'm just trying to get through that in order to get to life. And the truth is, it is a significant part of life, and we have to deal with that. We all have had to deal with that. Public education is not as old as sometimes we think. That is, schools operated by the state. Early schools in this country were not operated by the state. I think the earliest public education in the Roman Empire was in the time of Vespasian, which was 70 A.D. And before that, parents just selected a teacher, and they paid the teacher, and their children went to school. And it was a very great privilege to go to school. It's a little difficult in our setting to think of, and I know for these young people, to think of school as a great privilege that we're going to avail ourselves of. We think about the onerous, burdensome duty of going to school. And it can get to be drudgery. And we can hate every minute of it. And I think that's a mistake. I didn't like some of the classes I had to take. And some of them in my grade school education I thought were a waste of time. Some in my high school education I thought were a waste of time. Some even in my college education I thought were a waste of time. If I could go back, I would do better than I did in those classes because I just didn't know what was a waste of time and what was not. My instructors were wiser than I was, which should be no surprise. And few were the days I spent in my education that were not profitable had I chosen to attend to them more diligently. But I want to talk tonight to young people about how to be real as a student. And you got to be real as a student because it's part of your real life. And the reason it's so significant is you're learning things there that can be critical. And some of the things you might learn in your education will be detrimental if you're not wise. And a lot, perhaps, that you can learn during that period of time can be practically useful. Public education, all education usually, is intended to train us in skills to earn a living. Practical skills, practical wisdom. But always inevitably, in all education, because we are men and women, because we are made in the image of God, because we are moral creatures, inevitably, moral training will seep in. Or the lack of it. Moral principles will be taught, or a distinct disdain for moral principles will be communicated. And I'd like to just deal with how we can go to the schools that we go to get training for practical skills and be the kind of person we ought to be. And the first thing you're going to have to do is decide who that's going to be. When I talk about real tonight, I'm not talking about just sincere. I think that probably is the meaning of that term in modern parlance to many. Be sincere, be genuine. I'm talking about something more than that. Sometimes it's used in the sense of get real. That means face the facts. Quit saying one thing and doing another. But we're talking tonight not just about being consistent with what we say we want to be and what we say we'd like to be, but being absolutely certain that what we're choosing to be is going to last. We're talking about things that don't change, ever. And when you're in school, this choice has to be made. You can't just say to life, stop. Stop action, and we'll start again later on after we get through with this. You can't do that. And so for that reason, the first thing you need to do is find out what is real. 1 Timothy 4:12, Paul urges Timothy not to let anybody despise his youth, but to be an example to the believers in word, in manner of life, in love, in faith, in purity. It's obvious that he's talking here about things that he believes and the gospel teaches are ultimately real. And the reason they're ultimately real is because they come from God. And whatever comes from God, whatever issues from his personality and issues out of his nature and out of his will, that's what's real. And you can say, I'm not going to decide about that, but you'll make a grave mistake because you'll decide to be something else if you don't decide to be that. You cannot leave your decision on hold because you're going to have to make that decision. So the first thing you need to do as you go to school and before you go to school is to choose who or what you want to be. I have been meditating a bit on some parts of Ecclesiastes that speak to this subject, and I want to call your attention to some things in the 10th chapter of Solomon's excellent discourse on what life's about how to get real about life. And he says in the 10th chapter in verse 2 that a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Yea, also, when the fool walks by the way, his understanding fails him, and he saith to everyone that he's a fool. In other words, this man, even when he's taking a walk, even when he's doing the simplest thing, everybody knows he's a fool. He makes it evident that he's a fool. His heart is at his left hand. Doesn't have anything to do with the position of the heart and the chest. It's talking about he's out of kilter, awkward in life. Everything he attempts turns out badly. And the reason is because he doesn't know what it's about. He doesn't get it. And so he spends a lot of time in arduous, burdensome labor that gets him nowhere. In the 10th verse, if the iron is blunt, that is, read the axe, if the iron is blunt and one does not whet the edge, then he must put more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. Here's what happens to us. When we don't get real about life and when we don't decide what we want to be and we don't choose the thing that really is going to last, what we do is we like a fellow who's got a blunt axe out there whopping away at a tree trunk and getting nowhere. Now, that's the manifestation of a fool. Verse 15. 14 says, a fool also multiplies words, yet man knows not what shall be, and that which shall be after him, who can tell him? The labor of fools wearies every one of them. For he doesn't know how to go to the city. Now, it was a rural world, and obviously the city was something that was set on a hill, as Jesus said, and everybody knew how to get to the city. Anybody ought to be able to get to the city. This is one of the obvious things in life. And what he says about this fool is he doesn't even know how to get to town. The most obvious thing he doesn't know how to do, and therefore he works strenuously and labors mightily and gets nothing for it. So I know you're young, but life's going to be lived. Your life is going to be lived. Not somebody else's life. Your life's going to be lived. And into you are going to come all kinds of influences. And in every day, you're going to make all kinds of choices that will not be inconsiderable in their impact. They'll influence you. They'll influence other people. They'll influence the future. And for that very reason, you've got to make up your mind what you want to be. Some of you are too young to be Christians, but you're not too young to value the teaching of Jesus as it's come to you in your studies. You're not too young to value that. And you're not too young to make the Lord your hero. And you're not too young to make the people that chose to follow Him and to do the will of God, you're not too young to make them your heroes. Not going to have Michael Jordan. We need to get some better heroes than that. Some of them are very close to you. Some of them be young people you know who make decisions to do right no matter what. And you can be aware of that. Chapter 12 tells the story, you know. Verse 12, of making of many books there is no end, and much studies of weariness of the flesh, and students say, amen. Except for the fact that Solomon's not talking about going to school, he's talking about trying to get answers out of school books as if that's what life's about. What you have to remember as a student is that life's not about going to school. That you've got to bring life to the school. You've got to know who you are before you get there. Because if you don't know who you are before you get to school, they're going to make you what they want you to be. And if it's not the teachers, it'll be the other students. And I think in a world like our own, where the great concern in public education is how we're going to keep drugs out of the school, and it's no longer paper wads, it is guns, and assault and battery on the teachers, and students getting killed, students being addicted to drugs that ravage their lives, all these kind of things are part of public schools. But I remind you, the world of the Greeks and the Romans, when our ancient brethren served God and their children went to school, as they certainly went to school, it wasn't a good world then either. Tough world. And that's always been the case for a Christian and for those who love what Christ brought into the world and what God who made us would have us be. Everybody that loves that, he got to make up his mind. If you go to school, anybody's dog that'll hunt with you, willing to lie down the road and just let them move you wherever they want to move you, then you're going to be a victim. Because there's nothing in your head. No moral decision. No vision of what you need to be. And I'll tell you who puts that in your head. And we'll talk some more about that. It's your parents. If you're blessed. If you've got parents that care about you and are diligent in nurturing you in a certain direction, not because they want to turn you into a robot or a clone of themselves, but because they want you to have the advantage of knowing about higher and better things. And of course they want you to follow in that direction. Any parent who knows and understands something to be more precious than all the world, he's certainly going to communicate that to his child. He'd be a strange individual if he didn't. He'd really betray his children if he didn't. Knowing what he felt was important and saying nothing to them about it. Not urging them in that direction. So, you need to be convinced in your own mind of what you're going to be before you get to the schoolroom. Because when you get there with your head empty, they're going to fill it sometimes with a lot of nonsense. Now, here's the second rule. When you get to the classroom, sit down. Every new school year, unless you're fortunate to have had companions from the past school year that are going to the same school, and you'll find each other the first day and check up to see whether you've got classes together and how things are going to be. But usually in the school situation, you get separated from those old companions where you don't have the same classes, even though you're in the same school. And many times you're separated in the school. That is, they're going to another school now, and you're going to this school, and so you can't, and you're going to have to find some new friends. And we all know that human beings need friends. We are not made to walk in solitary loneliness through life. And we also know that when you're young and you don't have experience of being who you want to be, and you're not as secure in your own sense of worth as you will be later, that friends especially make a difference. But you need to be careful why you choose your friends. Peer pressure. It's obvious that everybody that's anybody here and everybody that's liked here and everybody that's accepted here, and by the way, there's not anything wrong with wanting to be accepted. You just got to be careful who you want to accept you. But you look around and you see who is in. Kids that were there last year, or kids that came in body, in mass, together to this new school, and they all know each other, and it's obvious that they're sort of the cream of the social crop. And you'll start looking to see how they behave themselves, because you're asking yourself the question, can I be a part of this group? Let me tell you a better question to ask. Do I want to be a part of this group? Is it because you like these people? Sometimes we get involved with friends, we don't even like them. But we're involved with them because we think we need the kind of support they can give, and they're the in group. And we don't even like these people. Do we choose our friends because they're decent? Moral? Kids with integrity? Or do they just rank higher in the school pecking order? We all know about the pecking order. Every school has one. Every social body of people has one. Except where it ought not to be. And most likely will not be when people are what they are, and that's in Christ. Because we all loved in the Lord. And we don't have any pecking order. And every person is precious. And in the family of man, in the human family, that ought to be the same case. There may be lines of authority, but it's not a pecking order. It's not who's big and who's important and who's to be elevated above others. But in school situations, that happens. I want to remind you of some things in that connection. Proverbs 13, verse 20. The companion of fools will smart for it.
That's the second part of the verse. First part of the verse is,
walk with the wise and you'll be wise. In other words, your companions are going to be a reflection of what you are. And not only that, they will influence what you are to become. Somebody says, well, but the Lord went around with a lot of bad people. I know that. But he went around with those bad people to help those bad people like a physician goes to sick people. He didn't seek them out as his constant companions in order to share life with them and to share values with them and to reinforce certain purposes and certain intents and dreams with them. That's not what he went out to those people for. Now, if you're going around in the schoolroom trying to help some people, then it's all right. But if you're looking for a bosom companion, if you're looking for a comrade, then you better be careful. Because if you get over there with the fools, and I can describe them. I remember them from my days. Always a bunch of knot-headed boys like to stand around the corner and make nasty remarks to the girls. Oh, it's cute. They reinforce each other, and they'll all stand over there and snicker and laugh and think they're absolutely God's gift to womanhood. And they're a bunch of crude, unthinking, unsensitive human beings. Or there'll always be the typical group that elevates itself by laughing at others. You know who I'm talking about? They love to pick out some poor soul and make him the butt of the joke. It's not funny to that individual, but of course, they're getting all kinds of amusement out of it. It hurts the other people. But because they run together and because they reinforce each other's behavior, of course, they would not ever question the behavior of the group because everybody must be loyal to the group, and if the group does it, then it has to be right, and of course the group leaders will decide that, and you'll be able to determine who the group leaders are. Here's the question. Do you want to be a part of that mindless, immoral, empty-headed group of people? Now, I want to say to you, some of those kids are to be pitied. They haven't had much of a chance. Parents probably divorced early in their lives. Or if they're not divorced, they're in a constant war. Or if they're not in a constant war, they're out there scrambling after things so diligently that they haven't had any time for these children. And they've grown up almost without nurture. And nobody's ever made them feel like they had any worth. And so now they're out there with the crowd, trying to scramble to get some identity. And whatever the crowd does, they'll follow after it because they don't have anything else to do. They've not been taught anything else. Is that the kind of companion you want to choose for yourself? And it's not just the young men anymore. The young ladies have now been elevated by the feminist philosophy. So they can be as gross, as aggressive, and as sexually explicit as young men have classically been through the years. You have to decide what kind of person you want to be, because when you choose that kind of companion, that's the kind of person you're saying, I want to be. First Corinthians 15:33, evil companionships corrupt good morals. That's the way it has to be. We influence each other. That's the way friends are supposed to do it. But when we choose friends that are evil, then that's the kind of influence we're bringing into our lives. You might as well get down and eat slop with the pigs. Morally speaking, you're taking it in. And I would urge you, choose companions who are noted for their decency, for their morality, and for their honor. And if possible, and you have access to some Christians there, some really godly young people, then spend your time with them. You say, but, I probably won't be president of the class. And I'd like to be president of the class. I probably won't be chosen most popular. Okay. Let's see. How many in this audience who finished their school years look back on those honors with great pride and pleasure today? What difference has it made? You ought to ask your parents about that. Oh, it's so important at the time, but that's because, it's because you just haven't found out from long perspective how insignificant that can be. Decide who you are and who you want to be, and then choose companions on the basis of that. And I'm urging you to be real, to choose the real thing, honorable things, high things, godly things, things that will make you a blessing to yourself and to others. And then be a disciplined student. Parents will appreciate me putting this in. I wasn't always a disciplined student. I didn't mind those classes that I was able to take care of everything within the school hours. The classes I didn't like too well, the ones that I'd do all that homework in. That was a burden. You couldn't get it done. We had study halls. I dated myself at least by asking about when the study hall was in the school period. They don't have any study halls in schools anymore. They've got another class in there. Well, let's put it this way. The Lord has had a few things to say about this particular subject. First of all, Romans 12, verse 11 says, in diligence, not slothful. Don't be lazy. Laziness is not something that the Lord commands. You don't get any credit for not doing what you're supposed to be doing. If we're going to school and we're going to school, we need to go to school with a purpose. If there's anything good in it, we ought to get the good that's there. And the good that's supposed to be there is I'm learning how to live my life in practical skills, so that I can be a blessing to myself and to my family and to other people. I'll be able to live in the world and to live with some measure of success in the world. So don't be lazy. Don't say, oh, who cares about school? Well, you will one of these days. I talked to a young man when I was out in Arkansas, son of a friend of mine, who
is that bright kid.
Bright. And he just decided he wanted to throw it all in. He'd go out with his buddies. So that was when he was about a sophomore. Finished the sophomore year with difficulty. Not because he couldn't do it, but because he just was indifferent to it. Left home, stayed with some of his buddies. But he told me when I talked to him recently, he's now back in the senior year, or he's back in his junior year, finishing up this year, when the rest of his class is finishing their senior year. That wasn't easy. They said the reason that he kind of came to his senses was because all his friends that he was running around with out there having a high old time working minimum wage and, you know, they're all their needs supplied because mother and daddy probably picking up some of the rest. He said all his friends started saying to him, I wish I hadn't left school. I wish I'd had an opportunity. And he decided maybe. It wasn't just his father's idea, but that was good. But even his friends, his peers are saying that. And so he got, himself back in the classroom. Well, Colossians 3:23, it's a principle that comes from our Lord. He says, we ought to do everything heartily. Whatever we do, we ought to do it heartily, as unto the Lord. If it's something worth doing, then let's do it well. And then a principle from Romans 12, again, Romans 12:17, that we ought to do things that are honorable in the sight of all men. And let me tell you, laziness and indifference and irresponsibility are not honorable. Proverbs 10, verse 26 is a very apt proverb. And just to read it sort of gives you a physical response. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send it. You don't want to become the sort of individual who, given a task, is known never to do it. And there are a lot of people in the school, you're going to meet them, they'll be there, who will enjoy their whole day doing what they want to do without any thought of finishing a lesson, without any thought of doing well in the class. They won't care about that. And they'll look like they're having a wonderful time. And here you are digging for the, you know, doing all the problems and writing all the essays that are required, and they're out there enjoying themselves. What is this? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's their stupidity. Don't be involved with those people. They are undisciplined individuals. And I'll tell you where it came from. It came from home life. They've never been required at home to finish their tasks. And one of these days, when they're up away from all this, from a life of school and a life of home and parents, and they're out there in the world that gets increasingly real, and they're going to want to do something, and it's going to be imperative for them to do something in order to be trusted in a job so they can have some money to take care of wife and take care of children, and they're not going to be able to do it because of old habits that still grip them. Because they didn't write that essay, and because they didn't finish those 10 problems, and because they skipped school the day of the test. We need to take the long look. Be a good student. Be serious and be diligent, and you bring honor to yourself and you bring honor to your parents. But somebody says, well, what if I don't do well in a certain subject? Well, how do you know you don't do well? Well, sometimes we don't do well because we haven't tried to do well. Maybe you're not going to be especially good in that subject. You just have to work a little harder. Apply yourself to it. But you'll find out whether you do well in a particular subject by doing the best you can. And you can't do better than that. Just do the best you can with that. But be responsible. Teachers recognize that responsibility. That is caring teachers. Well, can't spend forever on that. Be a good student. Fill up the day with what you're there for. Don't waste this time that you're spending in the classroom. Respect your parents, especially you very young students. You know, until you can figure things out for yourself, it's not too bad an idea to take what your father and your mother have given you and work on that until you're able to see for yourself about what's good. Solomon gives urgent appeal to that particular matter when he says in Proverbs 6:20, "My son, keep the commandment of your father and forsake not the law of your mother." That's a blessing of the human family, that until you get it all together, there's somebody that's helped you out there and given you something to be a guideline so you don't fall in the deep holes and make any big blunders. It's a wise idea to listen to your parents. Now, the time is going to come when you're going to have to choose for yourself out of your own careful evaluation, and maybe your parents could have been wrong about something, but it's too early in the game just to be kicking out against them, saying, "I'm not going to do what they say." And, of course, there'll be some kids at the school who say, "You just do anything your mother tells you, don't you? You're a sissy." Oh, he's stupid. I got in trouble using that word down in North Carolina. Maybe I ought to be more careful, because I've got parents in here saying, "Don't use that word. Don't you say stupid." Well, I mean by that, it is dumb. It is dumb. I think as one fellow says, D-U-M, dumb. Don't listen to that. If you could have a movie machine that would show the future, it would be wonderful to get a movie of what's going to happen to this kid who's saying, "Ah, do what your mother and daddy say." They'd pay any attention to that. We've got to have somebody to help us through the beginning time. There'll be a time for transition, but this is not the time. We need to respect our parents. The Lord taught that. And he taught it for our good, really. So you respect your parents. But he said, what about this respect your teachers? I know some of the teachers are not very good people, because they come out of the world where they're not, where a lot of people are not very good people. I understand that. But when I say respect your teachers, I mean do what they ask you to do. Don't turn into the class rebel. Don't turn into the class smart aleck. I remember a class where I absolutely shot myself in the foot by spending all my energies arguing with the teacher. I wanted so badly, in a class in English grammar, to demonstrate that the teacher didn't know what she was talking about. And I succeeded a few times in doing that. And to what end? I got a lower grade in the class. Isn't that wonderful? What an achievement. Everybody's forgotten about my triumphs in the classroom, but that grade is still on the books. Ego trip. Dumb. So don't fight the teachers. Don't have a war with the teachers. That's what a lot of students in the school are going to want. Let's fight the teachers, you know. We're here, it's war. It's war between the students and the teachers. Who's going to win the war? Well, that's not what it's about. Ideally, they're there to help the students. And ideally, you're there to learn something from them, because they know what you do not know. Take what you do not know from them, from those who do know it, and profit by that. Leave the rest. Some of them will be profane in their speech sometimes, and they can't keep it from slipping out. Filter that business out. But deal honorably with your teachers. Romans chapter 13, verse 7 said, "Honor to him, honor, tribute to him, tribute." There are going to be a lot of people who do not, in their personal character, deserve honor, but in the position that they've been put in, we will give them honor, because God has instructed us to do so. And I want to add something else. While you're there in school, you know, this is your life. Seek opportunities to be a blessing to other students. How about that? Yeah. Without polishing the apple, you might remember that sometimes teachers are low in self-esteem. Sometimes teachers are baffled by the challenges facing them. Sometimes they wonder whether they're doing any good at all. And just every now and then, when you see a teacher do good, teach an excellent lesson, just go up to that teacher and say, "This was a fine class today. You did well. Try it." Don't do it as some sort of clever way to ingratiate yourself to the teacher. Just do it because it's kind. And look around in the school.
for kids that are having a tough time.
For the kid who's always the butt of the jokes. Somebody's handicapped. Somebody's socially inept. But they need a friend too. Don't run with the crowd that has established itself as the socially elite. Pick up a fellow who's fallen by the wayside. Or a girl, and be a friend to that person. So that the time you spend in school is going to be a time when you've been a blessing to other people. When you've been kind, when you've been gracious. When you've defended the downtrodden. And made yourself a friend of those who have been rejected by those who think themselves something when they're not. So look for opportunities to serve. And if you're a Christian, look for opportunities to share Christ with your fellow students. And above everything else, don't betray what you've chosen to be. If you've chosen to be a child of God, don't ever betray that. And don't be ashamed. There are going to be things institutionalized in the school, unfortunately, not just coming about as a result of influence from the students, some sort of informal influence that is bad, but I mean there are going to be some things that the school administrators will ask you to do that you cannot do as a Christian. It's going to be the three Hebrew children in Nebuchadnezzar all over again. It's going to be bow down to the golden image. Or we will see that you're going to be in a very unpleasant circumstance. And what are you going to do in that case? You're going to remember who you are. And you're not going to be ashamed of that. Look, the rest of the world is the world that's in trouble. Why should I yield myself to this low ground? Why should I yield myself to influences that are destroying other people right and left? Don't betray who you are. Don't betray the principles. Decide what you're going to do on the basis of principle, not on the basis of social whim, not on the basis of acceptance by people that you really ought not even want to be accepted by. Don't dress in a way that's wrong just because that's the way they do it at this school. Don't involve yourself in social activities in that school just because that's what the teachers and everybody does here. You'll feel good about yourself when in a kind, gracious, but firm way you say, "I'm sorry, I just can't read that book. Give me some other work to read. Give me two books to read, but I can't read that one." I'm not trying to run away from responsibility. Would give me something else I can do. And if you're young in the school and you see problems, you talk to your mother and father. Talk it over with them. They've been through it already. Gone through the school system, had the challenges, had to choose between doing what everyone else was doing and what they felt like they ought to do. But I want to tell you something. As a result of all this, you're going to be real. You're going to be somebody whose whole life is geared to principles that are deep and solid and everlasting. And not only that, you're going to look back one day and say, "I am so glad. I'm so glad that that's the road I took, because it won't take too many months until all those school days and all those school circles and all those school events will have faded from your memory like that classroom I bought, and I don't even know where it is now. I know where that classroom is. First of all, the set fell out. I think it was that last girl I gave it to. He might have been a little hard on that ring. But anyway, it's gone. I don't care. I didn't care enough. And when it came time to buy one for college, I knew I wasn't going to care for that, so I just didn't buy it. Save the money. Build your life on things eternal. Hold to God's unchanging hand. Even though you're a student.
Because you're a student. Because this is a critical an important time of your lives. May the Lord bless you. I know you can do it. I know you want to do it. If you're not a Christian tonight, never confessed Jesus as Lord, and never been buried with Him in that fluid grave that He has appointed, being baptized in His name for the forgiveness of sins, we invite you to come. If it's a Christian, you've made some blunders that have been rather open and egregious. If your own influence has been anything but good, if you have caused other people to look at the behavior you have chosen and said, "If that's what a Christian is, I don't want to be that." If you've caused some other people who are Christians to be led in the same direction because of your example, then
We urge you. I'm simply saying to you, we're saying together, don't keep going that path. Turn and do the right. Turn and do the right while we're standing and singing.